Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much, big boys in the sky. We are back here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. The 2018 season preview is in full swing. Chip Patterson here. Barton Simmons. Barton, one of the first tasks that we had when we got together on this podcast a year ago was to knock out win totals. And I think that in doing so, we found a real niche for discovering some of our biggest questions about the season in trying to decide, you know, how these conferences are going to shake out, sort of getting a good landscape. And so I've been looking forward to this for a while now. It's good to be back making some bold predictions that are sure to go sideways like 3 weeks into the year.
Yeah, it's a good way to get into the season and sort of dive in while also providing some money-making opportunities out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think we made some money last year. I think, the two I remember being really bullish on were Mississippi State and South Carolina, and those both hit on overs.
Correct.
And so we'll have to sort of really give, as we go through this, we'll have to be clear about what our sort of locks are, because there's certainly some I'm not as confident on. But this is, I think, my favorite way to dig into the conference previews is by actually gambling.
To pull the curtain back a little bit, I know that we had thrown it around, but I feel like once we get through, we'll do each Power 5 conference, we'll get an episode, and then we will do another one where we tackle Notre Dame and some of the prominent Group of 5 schools. But then once we get those 6 win totals episodes out of the way, I think that it'll be time to reconvene the syndicate and that can be somehow our first locks of the year.
Or our lock win totals of the year?
Yeah.
All right, that works for me.
Okay. Because we'll be down in Fort Lauderdale doing some team stuff, and so that'll be another good opportunity to link up. Maybe we'll knock it out down there. Should be a lot of fun. Okay, so we begin in the Pac-12, and I want to start by asking you, Barton, what was your general approach to this, just so that there's full transparency with the fans. We're trying to get them good money-making opportunities, good values. You know, what was your approach to this in terms of making your calls over or under on all these win totals?
So we do something for 24/7 Sports called Barton Makes Picks, where we put together Facebook video team by team, where I predict the outcome for the season, game by game, literally predict every game that the team plays. And last year I caught some flack because I would sort of do it off the cuff, and everyone was basically 8-4 last year. They're all 8-4. And so
didn't like anybody enough to go through and give them 10 to 12 wins, but
right. And yeah. you never threw a 6-6 on. It was just, you know, I decided this year, look, I'm not going to take that kind of flack. I'm going to go and I'm actually going to pick these games and have them correlate across the board to the other seasons I picked. So I went ahead and took that to this. I went through the Pac-12, and my win totals are going to be reflective of an actual season taking place and where I picked every game and every win, every loss. And so it should all fit together and make sense. I don't think that's the way you have to do win totals, because I think there's a lot of situations where you can say, look, I don't think this team is going to win all three of this stretch, but they're going to win two of the three. I don't know which one they're going to lose, but I just don't see them finishing out that stretch perfect, whatever. So I don't think that's a mandatory way to pick a win total, is actually picking their season game by game. But that happens to be the way I did it, and I feel okay about my list. What was your process?
My process was a little bit closer to that, where I start out and I sort of pick the games on the polar opposites. These are the ones that I feel like are wins. These are the ones that I feel like are losses. And then in the idea that a toss-up game is considered a 50-50, I would go through and try to award about half of those toss-up games as wins and half of those toss-up games as losses. And for, you know, some of the best teams in the country, there might be, you know, 8, 9, maybe even 10 games that I felt like were certain wins with two toss-ups. So then all of a sudden I'm sitting here and I'm like, well, 11-1, that doesn't seem that crazy. You know, I feel like a certain team probably is going to lose, has the opportunity to lose at some point based on this particular stretch. I don't know which of these three games it's going to be. So that, you know, you sort of almost like a process of elimination. So I do end up trying to keep some consistency with the toss-up game. So that's where I fall a little bit more into your bucket, is that if I decide that, for example, Arizona's going to have the leg up on Arizona State, then that is going to be reflected both in Arizona and Arizona State's win total. And in the Pac-12 with the 9-game conference schedule, you do have a lot of ripple effects when you start making those decisions.
I got 6 overs. I got 6 overs, and I've got 6 unders or pushes. I got 2 pushes. One is a push over, one is a push under. But I feel like that's a pretty fair,
that's balanced,
pretty fair assessment.
Yeah, yeah. I think for the ACC, I think this one I might be 6-6 or 7-5, and then for the ACC I was 8-6, but I kind of felt okay with that because the ACC, you get 4 non-cons, and a lot of them load up on the more cupcakey non-cons. But today's not about the ACC. Today's about the Pac-12. So Barton, are you ready to dive into 2018 win totals?
Jingle me up, Chip.
Count them up. Count them up. Count them up. How many games y'all gonna win this fall? How many games y'all gonna win this fall?
That's right.
Oh yes.
It's win total season.
Oh, that's so awesome. I'm so ready. God, I was, you know, once that beat dropped, I thought I was ready. I wasn't ready.
You weren't ready until that beat dropped. all right, I got 2 ways to play this. You get to call. We can start at the high end of the win total and work our way down, or we can go alphabetical. Or we could each just start picking out teams that we find are interesting. In the Pac-12, because I think we got less, we won't get too lost.
Let's go top, top numbers, biggest numbers on down.
Washington. We're talking about this at 10.5 number, potentially going to fluctuate. The juice when we took it from the early releases from the Westgate had under at -120, over with an even payout there. Who knows what that's going to be at, the local institutions, but I think 10.5, that's a great number to start the discussion on the Washington Huskies. And I want to throw this at you, Barton. We've both been bullish on Washington at times in this podcast. And now as we enter the season with Jake Browning back, with Miles Gaskin back, they did a lot to try and make sure that while they lost Jonathan Smith, the offensive coordinator to head coach at Oregon State, they paid up to make sure that the defensive staff was going to be able to stay together. I'm looking at Washington, and I'm looking at no other teams in the Pac-12 that have a win total within 2 wins of the Huskies. And it almost feels, a big picture, like a no-win season for Washington. Like they're either going to make the college football playoff or it's going to be considered a disappointment.
Yeah. I mean, this team doesn't have many holes. I know they got to replace some things on defense. But I don't know. God, this is a weird team for me because – First of all, I've been on Washington, like
right.
You mentioned. Like this, I picked them in the college football playoffs each of the past 2 years, and this is the year where they probably have the best team they've had. And somehow, for some reason, I'm just really scared to pull the trigger on them for another playoff prediction. I think the good news or bad news or whatever for Washington is, look, you'll know what the win total is going to be. Like, if they win week 1 against Auburn, they're hitting the over. They're not going to lose. They're not going to lose two more games the rest of the season if they beat Auburn in week one. Do you agree with that?
What does it look like behind Jake Browning? Because we don't have Jacob Eason yet.
No, but it's solid. I mean, they've got a sort of classic Peterson quarterback in Jake Haener, who's sort of a Kellen Moore type. He's 6 foot. He's not doesn't have a ton of arm talent, but he's a scratch golfer. You know what I mean? Like, just he the type of guy that, you know, he'll pick up a wiffle ball bat and he'll be the best guy in the playground. Just he'll figure it out. So, and I think that's all they really ask of their quarterbacks right now, or that's all they have asked of them.
I 100% agree.
So I'm not worried about if Jake Browning goes down necessarily, because I don't think Jake Browning is in some ways the Achilles heel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you ask Jake Browning to win you a football game, that's you're in trouble. Like, that's the reason that that Washington has a ceiling on it right now is because if they get in the college football playoffs and they're playing against Alabama or Clemson or Ohio State or someone of that ilk, Jake Browning can't make those throws that you need him to make to beat a team like that. So that's not my concern. My concern with them is I'm just say what my prediction is. I got them under.
Woo! At 10-2?
I got them at 10-2 because I have them losing to Auburn.
Yeah.
You know, they're going into SEC country. Auburn's legit. Auburn's defensive line is going to be among the best in the country. I just think that I don't know. I'm just picking Auburn in that game. And then I'm assuming through the rest of the schedule, you know, whether it's – you remember last year they lose 13-7 to Arizona State, like kind of this inexplicable just egg game.
Oh, yeah. And like with – and that one game against Arizona State is really the only regular season blemish that we have in terms of like a bad performance in the last 2 to 3 years.
Right. And so that's – I may be even being too – cynical to think that there's another one of those in them, but like I picked them on my schedule. I pick them losing at Cal.
Mm.
So like that's the week before Stanford. The Pac-12 North is about to be on the line, but they kind of, there's an opportunity to overlook Cal, and I think Cal's going to be good this year. And I just don't. And it's not anything about that one game that I feel like is just this major stumbling block. I just see the Pac-12 having enough parity to where it's going to be tricky for them to just cruise through it. So I don't. Again, it's about, you know, what do you think is going to happen in that Auburn game?
Right.
And then can they just go undefeated the rest of the year?
So I've got Washington beating Auburn in that game.
Okay.
And it goes back to Boise State, Georgia, 2010 or 2009, maybe 2011. I think it's the 2011 Chick-fil-A kickoff game in Atlanta. Chris Peterson brings Boise State in. Georgia's wearing those Power Ranger red and black uniforms. It was a year that everybody was really excited about the Bulldogs, and Boise State just came out, and they made that game really uncomfortable. And that's where my bet on Washington to win that game is a Chris Peterson bet. But
yeah.
But then I do think they're going to take one. So my pick is over. I've got Washington at 11-1. And then to go back to the idea of the toss-up games, I'm actually looking at two road games where I think that Washington could stumble. The first is going to be at Oregon in Autzen, in what will be a huge atmosphere where Justin Herbert against Jake Browning. I mean, there's no question the quarterback advantage goes to the Ducks, right?
Oh, yeah. No
big
question.
Time. And so yeah. I think the Oregon game in Autzen is going to be really, really tough. The other one's Utah. And I don't know this, and we can, you know, we'll get to them in a little bit. But I think that Utah does not have a team that's going to make a college football playoff or a Pac-12 championship run. But I think Utah's team And this isn't that different or crazy to say based on what we've seen from them in recent years. I just think that you, between Oregon and Utah, both those games being on the road, I think Washington loses one of those. But again, I'm going Washington over Auburn in that opener. And so I'm going over Washington 11-1. And if they've got the Auburn win, and this is the other fun thing about the college football playoff picture, like college football playoff selection committee is going to love that Auburn win.
Oh, if they have the Auburn win, they can absorb a loss maybe.
Right.
And they've got they'll be in uncharted territory where they actually can have a blemish and still got a shot. As opposed to just needing to, you know, not only just win every game, but almost dominate every game for people to believe.
Right. So it feels like a no-win season where Washington's going to be fighting the perception of the Pac-12. They're going to be fighting the classic, you know, the biases of not being able to get in front of the eyes of a lot of the college football fans that are rabble rousers. And certainly, you know, it's going to be a challenge for the selection committee to give them the same spotlight that they're going to be getting, that they would be getting if they were an East Coast team. But if they can win in Atlanta, I don't know, man. Washington, college football playoff.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about Auburn. And I will say this too. We'll get to Utah, but every time I was looking at schedules, when I saw at Utah, I was really tempted to throw that L down there for every team that I looked at in the Pac-12, because that's a scary place with this Utah team. So,
all right. So we got Barton going under, Chip going over. We move down the line to USC, 8.5 wins here. We mentioned them a little bit in our last podcast, at least in the terms of, you know, like USC, you said USC's the guys around USC say it's not even a secret anymore. JT Daniels, true freshman, reclassified, doesn't matter. Guys got maturity, guys got, you know, the skill set. He's going to be out here. They got a great set of wide receivers. My question for you is, how do you feel about this USC team on the defensive line? I like them at linebacker. I know they've been recruiting well in the defensive backfield. D-line is a big concern for me right now.
I like them up front. I mean, Brandon Peely is a star for them, a true sophomore that was really impactful last year as a true freshman. But they've also got Marlon Tuipulotu, who was a borderline starter last year, beginning of the season, as a true freshman who got hurt. So now he's back, you know, still holding on to a redshirt season. So last year, 2017 recruiting class, they had a sick defensive line haul, and now these guys are all redshirt freshmen and sophomores. So in the middle, they're in good shape, and then they've got some experience around them in terms of some older guys that have played. I just like they have one of the best linebacking corps in the country. Their secondary is solid. They have some big names, but I don't know that they're, you know, first round draft picks in the secondary. So I think defensively, I feel pretty good about them. And so to me, it's just about like how quickly does JT Daniels look like not just a competent starter, but a good starter,
right? But man, like, he catches it on the chin early.
That's
in
what I'm
September.
Saying. Yeah, that's a – I mean, UNLV is a W, but then they got at Stanford, at Texas, you know, Washington State, and then at Arizona. That's a hey, brother, I hope you're – you know, this ain't high school anymore. I mean, this is – we're going to get going quick. So, agreed. I mean, I've got them at over.
Ooh. But at 9-3,
I was a little bit surprised to see that number at 8.5. I just figured that the USC brand would generate a little bit more enthusiasm for a higher number. But I got them at 9-3.
I got them at 8-4. I'm going with the under here.
Okay, so where do you see the hiccups, and what are you? What's your like?
I think that they could enter their bye week with 3 or 4 losses. And I think that if you're talking about a team that's going to enter early October with 3 or 4 losses with an over-under where they can only sustain 3, and then you're talking about going down the rest of the stretch hoping that they have full health, for a team that has not had great injury luck over the last 3 or 4 years.
True.
You know, they like it. It's hard to sometimes it's hard to be able to, especially in the college football playoff era. It's hard to be able to point to successes that didn't end in competing for a national championship. But like USC just won the Pac-12 championship for the first time in a long time. Like, to imagine that there might be a little step back, I don't think is that crazy. And it just, for someone who's used to seeing, you know, Pete Carroll's USC, it might be hard to wrap your head around that. But Clay Helton, you know, from the Rose Bowl to last year, getting to the Pac-12 championship game, winning the Pac-12 championship game, like the steps to success in making USC a consistent top five program, you know, they're not there yet. They're making those steps, but in the cycle of a program building, I think that 8-4 seems more likely than 9-3. Those were the two ones that I was going between. And the how tough it is early for a young new starting quarterback was ultimately the decision that had me thinking that 8-4 is more likely than 9-3.
So this is where it's either a gift or it's a curse, that like it's either like enough information to be dangerous kind of deal for me, where like I'm familiar with the recruiting classes to the point where when I look at their offense and I see Stephen Carr at running back, I see Tyler Vaughns at receiver, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Michael Pittman, I see their offensive line, Austin Jackson, a former five-star, steps into the left tackle role this year as a sophomore, Chuma Edoga from Georgia, who is one of the most athletic offensive linemen in the country. I see a defense that's got Porter Gustin healthy again. Those defense alignment I just talked about, Cameron Smith in the middle. Like, they've got everything except for a quarterback. And I think they've got a quarterback. He just might not be ready right from the jump, and there's no depth behind him. And so I'm looking at their schedule, and I say, all right, they beat UNLV. I've got them losing at Stanford. I've got them losing at Texas. And so, all right, they're 1-2 to start the season. Whatever. Clay Helton's been here before. Beat Washington, beat Washington State. Go and beat Arizona at Arizona. Now they're 3-2, hitting a bye week, settle themselves a little bit. And now I think, like, you look at the rest of their schedule: Colorado, Utah, Arizona State, Oregon State, Cal, UCLA, Notre Dame. Which of those games scares you with the roster the USC has? So,
what about that Arizona game?
I mean, I'll chalk that up as a win, but that's certainly no given.
Right.
But at the same time, I still think that USC is a more talented team than Arizona. And there's no reason to think that, like, I bet you USC's favored in that game.
Yeah, I would bet USC's favored in that game. I think that, part of my idea that this is going to be, did you have them at 9-3, or are you going to take them all the way to 10-2?
No, I got them 9-3.
Okay,
because I picked a loss at Utah.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm telling you, I couldn't resist.
I think that it might be one of those years where the win total is not super impressive, but you know, if they lose to Texas, lose to Notre Dame, lose to Stanford, but then you know beat Utah, Utah takes a couple L's. Like USC could be 8-4 at the end of the year and still playing for the Pac-12 championship. And that's where I go back to.
Which is sort of what USC's been, isn't it?
It's like
disappointing year, but here they are in the Pac-12 championship game.
Right. And so I know that's hard to swallow as a USC fan who wants to see your team 11-1 or in the top four of the college football playoff rankings. But, you know, I don't think it's a consolation prize to be winning Pac-12 championships, because even the Pac-12 championships weren't there for a while.
There.
All right. You want to go to Oregon. Tasty. 8.5.
Go first on this one. I'm curious what you think on Oregon here.
I'm very, very aggressively behind Justin Herbert. I'm over on the call. And I think the fact that they've got Stanford and Washington both playing in Eugene is like they'll get one of those. And you know, depending on what Stanford is, and you know, we'll get to them here shortly, but you know, they could win both of those. Now, I don't think that Oregon, I don't feel confident enough in Oregon defensively to say that this is going to be, you know, a college football playoff crasher. But I like the fact that Jim Leavitt played a lot of young guys last year, and I like the idea that a lot of those young players are going to have the opportunity to, you know, continue to develop. And if we see some steps forward there, then, you know, this is a team that, because they kept Marcus Arroyo, because they kept Jim Leavitt, like, I don't think that Mario Cristobal was my A-plus hire of the season, but I think that the decisions elsewhere and the way things came together have me feeling like Oregon could go out and finish 9-3.
I got them 9-3. I'm with you. I'm on the over. The Pac-12 is interesting because between Oregon, Arizona, you know, even Cal to a certain degree, like there's a lot of true freshmen that played a lot of meaningful minutes last year.
Last season. Yes, absolutely.
And so you look across this roster for Oregon, I don't know, Johnny Johnson, true freshman that played last year, D'Amador Lenore, Nick Pickett, Thomas Graham, Jordan Scott, Austin Faulu. So, I mean, it's just all over the place there, these guys. So if you just, like, if you believe in their ability to develop and you believe that these guys are all going to have taken a step forward, I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic here. I also think, like you said, hanging on to, I don't think I would be talking about an over right now if they hadn't held on to Jim Leavitt.
I agree.
So I think that's to have some continuity there is huge. And like you said, I mean, Justin Herbert is, he might be like the runaway best quarterback in the country. Like it might be a type of season where it's not even close. Like he's the clear number one draft pick. He's the clear, you know, he may be a Heisman front runner.
If he takes down one or both of Stanford or Washington at home, then that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm with you on Oregon, and you know, I think looking at what they did last year with Herbert and without him is pretty, I think, telling too. You know, I mean, like if he stays healthy last year, I mean, what's their record? I don't know. Maybe they had two more wins. So I think, I'm on a 9-3. I got them losing to Stanford, losing to Washington, and losing, guess where?
Utah.
So I don't have them winning either of those, but I kind of have them winning every game they're supposed to win, with the exception, I guess they may be favored in Utah, but I've got them winning pretty much every game they're supposed to win. And I'm with you. I think whether you believe in Cristobal as a head coach, like there is reason to believe in him because he's had success at FIU, and at the very least, like there's a reason to have a lot of belief in his assistant coaches, and they're recruiting at a really high level. So there's some upward trajectory here. I mean the trajectory line is still pointing up for Oregon.
Jim Leavitt. I trust player development on the defensive side of the ball under Jim Leavitt because he got a senior class at Colorado to win the Pac-12 South level at Cala freaking Rado.
Yeah.
I mean, that entire defense came in. They were all thrown into the fire early. And by the time they were juniors and seniors, you know, they were some of the best players in the conference. And so if we see anything like that, yeah, I agree with you. I think that I like Oregon. All right, well, let's keep it in the North. Stanford's number is at 8. You go first on this one.
Okay. Well, I'm a enthusiastic over. I have them 8. Like I cannot see Stanford only winning 7. So, worst case, you get a push here. But I like the over because this offense is kind of sick. Like, this could be as good of an offense as there is in the country. People who have listened to our podcast know how much we felt, or certainly I felt, like that KJ Costello should have been the guy pretty much all year last year.
Right.
So assuming he's healthy, and like there's, I guess, an element here of let's make sure the quarterbacks are healthy, because he and Davis Mills both missed spring practice. But assuming KJ Costello is healthy, they're a good team with him at quarterback. They'll be, I think, a more sound quarterback, the quarterback position, than they've been in a couple years. Bryce Love, no need to even discuss. But he'll be a Heisman front runner. Colby Parkinson, Trent Irwin, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, Caden Smith. Like, those are great Stanford-level options. And then they've got this great offensive line that's going to have take a step forward from last year, too. So when you're looking at Stanford offenses traditionally, I can't think of one that's more well-rounded and balanced than this one. Given multiple tight end options that are elite, a big receiver on the outside, some dynamic playmakers, including Bryce Love, I just think offensively they are loaded. And I've got a little bit of concern. Like, I don't think you can just chalk it up and say Stanford will be Stanford on defense, because they didn't look like Stanford a lot last year. Like, they gave up some points last year. But they've got a really good secondary. I love Elijah Holder, who missed a lot of last year. They've got good linebackers. And, you know, if that defensive front can just sort of evolve into a Stanford defensive front, I like it. So I got them at 9-3. I got them losing at Notre Dame, at Washington, at UCLA, last game of the year. But I am surprised to see that number as low as it is. I feel like the Stanford team is pretty loaded.
David Shaw has been at Stanford since 2011, 7 seasons. They have finished lower than 8 regular season wins once. They have played in 4 of the last 6 Pac-12 championship games. And I have no idea why a team that's returning the Heisman Trophy front runner. And like, that was my first sentence in the write-up was I don't understand why a team that's had this much sustained success over the last we're almost at the 8-year mark with David Shaw, and the 8-5 season is the aberration. And right. I don't look at this roster and see an aberration coming. Now, I will say, when I started to go down the schedule, you have to feel pretty good about being able to take them if you're going to jump all the way up to 10 wins. And I was not there. And we're going to get to Notre Dame later on, but that's a team I just don't have a good feel for right now.
No, I agree. Yeah.
And so I really was sort of, you know, furrowing my brow over that one. But at 8, come on, man.
Yeah.
No.
This is like, I need to do some research on this, but I can't, off the top of my head, it doesn't feel like there's a more talented offensive unit that Stanford has had under David Shaw. So I don't know why we think that they can't get to 8 or 9 wins, assuming their defense can just keep pace. So I'm heavy on the over.
All right, let's see. We got Oregon taken care of. Let's see. Are we finally to Utah? Oh yeah, baby. All right. Utah set at 7 wins, marked down in Barton's notebook with at least 14 based on all the we talked about Utah at home. They get Washington, Stanford. They have Washington, Stanford, and Oregon out of the Pac-12 North. That is as tough of a draw for a Pac-12 South team as it gets, facing the top 3 teams from the other division. But I think that you go first.
Well, so I think this is a tough schedule. I mean, first of all, at Northern Illinois in week 2 is no joke. I mean, that's a tough week 2 game.
Is it?
Yeah. Do you remember
I just saw Duke turn Northern Illinois to mincemeat.
Well, Northern Illinois, they beat Nebraska last year at Nebraska.
True.
Remember, that was sort of the beginning of the end for Mike Riley.
True.
They nearly beat Boston College in week 1. in just sort of this ugly 20-23 game. They've got like the best offensive line and the best defensive line in the MAC probably. And they got this kid Sutton Smith who's when you're going to Northern Illinois, when you're going to DeKalb, Illinois, like that's and I don't know. I just think that's going to be a kind of a lazy, maybe rainy late afternoon.
Yeah.
And I could see that being ugly. So that's a potential loss there. I think they lose to Washington. I think they lose at Stanford. And then I've got them winning, like I said, I've got them beating USC. I've got them beating Oregon. Because I think they're really good at home. They got Arizona at home on a Friday night.
Win.
I think they're winning that.
Win.
And so I've got them over at 8-4. And I think, look, a couple of reasons. And this will be an interesting year because, remember, Kyle Whittingham sort of handed the keys over offensively to Troy Taylor to make him a little more spready. And that's not really Utah's identity in the past. And so in year two, in the spread-esque transition, like, is this going to be a breakout year where, like, all of a sudden this offense is just tough for everybody to deal with, which is, I think, a very real possibility. But, like, then what does that do for your defense? Or is this going to be like, all right, man, what have you done to us, Kyle? Because we used to be this dominant defense, and now we can't catch our breath, and now teams are scoring a lot of points on us, and we're playing in shootouts. And so I'm just curious whether the identity of this team starts to really shift this year. But this is probably my favorite defensive secondary in the country. Whether it's the best, I don't know, but it's like my favorite. I love Corion Ballard and Marquise Blair as like these big, huge hitters in the at safety. Jalen Johnson's a stud as a true sophomore. Javelin Guidry is like one of these 5'9 speed demons. They got Chase Hansen, who moved down from safety to linebacker. And then they've always got defensive linemen. So I like their defense just because it's a Utah defense. And then I'm a big Tyler Huntley guy at quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be good. And then I sort of trust Troy Taylor offensively to manufacture points. And so all that to say, I think seven is a tasty number to me. If it was eight, it'd be a little tougher for me to pull the trigger on. But I feel like this is a comfortable over for me at seven.
I think they can get to 9-3.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they got to 9-3.
And it's going to be one of these where like the right wins. They're going to have to go to Northern Illinois and win that game to be 9-3. But it's going to be like the right wins. I think the Pac-12 South is going to be just head-to-head tiebreaker central in November, where because Utah has USC and Arizona, you get those wins, and those wins are huge for being able to have the tiebreakers, and having the tiebreakers, therefore, can do a little bit to offset whatever losses you might take against Washington, Stanford, and Oregon. If Utah can get one of that Washington, Stanford, Oregon, and both USC and Arizona, like those were the five key games that I identified, and I said if they can win three of those five, then they can go 9-3.
Pac-12 South is funky now, man. Like there's a lot of teams that can beat each other in that division, and so I think that Utah is as stable as any of them to sort of weather that storm. But that's going to be a really interesting division to see what happens. But I'm with you. I have an 8-4 with the loss to Northern Illinois. So I'm with you on 9-3.
Arizona. Apologies to the Wildcats. Their number is 7-5. There is a lot of reason to be excited about Kevin Sumlin taking over a team that has Khalil Tate, with Khalil Tate potentially being able to take yet another step in how effective that he can be, not just over a month, but over an entire 12-game season. Is it more complicated than looking at Arizona and thinking that Sumlin plus Tate equals some kind of fireworks? Like, before we even get to the win total, like that I don't see much of a chance of that not at least being entertaining.
I mean, I don't see much of a chance of Khalil Tate not being entertaining, no matter who the coach is.
Yeah.
You know, like I agree with you. I don't know what to think about Arizona. This was probably the hardest one for me Because I don't – yeah, like I think Khalil Tate would be really good. But then I think you do look at the way that Arizona finished last year as teams started to figure out how to defend Khalil Tate. And it was a lot – it was a lot tougher road for them and for him. And so was that just a minor blip and then he accelerates again into 2018? Or was that more of like, all right, look, that, there's a reason why he wasn't starting over what's his name? Brandon
Dawkins.
Dawkins. And so, I don't know. I'm the other like this is another team. Like they played freshmen everywhere on defense last year, and so these guys should be improved. You know, Marcel Yates stayed there as the defensive coordinator, so there's not some turnover at defense. They'll run the same system, so. So I don't know. I actually have them under, and I've got them at 6-6.
Wow.
I don't feel great about that, but I also feel like they are one of the more vulnerable teams in terms of a team I can see losing some of these swing games. You know, I've got them losing to USC. I've got them losing at Utah on a Friday night. I've got them losing at UCLA. UCLA's going to catch some of these teams. They're not. UCLA's not just going to get boat raced every week. I got them losing to Oregon, and then I've got them losing last game of the year to Arizona State. So yeah, that's another swing game. That's a home game. That's a maybe that's a, makes them 7-5 if they win that one. But those other ones, and then I also have them losing at Houston, because that's going to be a Super Bowl for Houston week two, with Ed Oliver chasing Khalil Tate. That's going to be a fun matchup.
Oh, that's going to be a really fun matchup.
So I don't know, man. Like yeah. I am not saying that with confidence. But I just feel like this is a team that is – I don't know that Kevin Sumlin – like, I don't know. What is Kevin Sumlin – like, Kevin Sumlin didn't inspire a lot of confidence in College Station.
How do you feel about the Arizona wide receivers?
They're – to me, they're like these sort of slotty –
because I was thinking athletic. That we could get the RPO quick game going with Khalil Tate.
Sure. Yeah.
That feels very Kevin. That feels like Kevin Sumlin wanting to be able to build all these packages that involve quick slants and outs, and you know you just keep sort of chipping away at it, and then hope that the big play breaks and Tate runs for a 60-yard touchdown.
Have we talked about the near Ken Niumatalolo hire for Arizona? Have I given you my opinion on that?
Oh, no, you have not.
So Khalil Tate basically like squashed that hire when he tweeted out,
"I want to be an option,
triple option, or whatever he said," and that was potentially going to happen. And so, but there was such a sort of a pushback from Khalil Tate and from sort of this, I guess, the Arizona community. But that would if Ken Niumatalolo was there, Khalil Tate's a Heisman Trophy candidate winner. And he's like, that's the perfect system for him. It's not, he's not under center, just like, you know, reverse fake handoff. Like, it's more of an Oregon triple option, anyways. It would have been at Arizona than some like old school Air Force Navy stuff. And I think he would have been unbelievable in that. And last year was a great offense for him, too, with Rich Rodriguez, you know, his background really running a true like quarterback run system. And Kevin Sumlin will be good for him, and they'll develop him as a passer. And I'm not saying that it's like a bad thing for Khalil Tate to have Kevin Sumlin there, but it wasn't but it's not better than Rich Rodriguez, right?
I don't know.
Like, is it Rich Rodriguez has made his entire career around run first quarterbacks. Kevin Sumlin wants to be a pass first guy with an athletic quarterback. I just don't know why the assumption is that it's a better situation for Khalil Tate under Kevin Sumlin than it would have been under Rich Rodriguez, and certainly under Ken Niumatalolo. So I'm not picking them in the Rose Bowl just yet.
I think that first of all, I wrote this for CBS Sports. I had Arizona at over 7.5. I have since made an adjustment in one particular game. We'll get to that in a little bit. And that's so I'm actually my stance for the podcast is an under. You will not hear me mention this on our Locks podcast because it is a big-time stay-away game for me. And the last thing I would add for Kevin Sumlin is that I think that there is an opportunity for some Kevin Sumlin redemption here.
If sure.
Whatever made me and a lot of the rest of football really believe that Kevin Sumlin was the kind of coach that, you know, was going to end up in the NFL one day.
Right.
He's got a great talent and an opportunity at Arizona where, I mean, let's be honest, scrutiny ain't there like it is at College Station. If you want to go in there and if you want to cook and if you want to try and just show the scheming, the play design, the coaching ball, if you want to get back to, you know, the type of stuff that you were doing, like, you're not going to have the same kind of obligations. Life is going to be much more like when you were a coordinator at Oklahoma than it was when you were a head coach at Texas A&M. So I agree.
Yeah.
I think that if there's a chance that happens. That said, again, I'm going Arizona 7-5. All right, let's bounce down to Washington State. 6.5. Washington State loses Alex Grinch, loses Luke Falk, no Cody O'Connell, no Hercules Mataafa. I think that this is a year that really tests the sustained success, the longevity, the, you know, how plug and play is Washington State at this point in Mike Leach's tenure.
Yeah, this is not a. I mean, this is a comfortable under to me.
Mm-hmm, me too.
I mean, I got him at 4-8.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
I just think, like, and the other, like, you mentioned some of their losses. You also talk about Mike Leach
going
was basically
to Tennessee.
Out the door to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Like that's you don't just, like, that doesn't happen and then you just come back and everything's A-okay. And so I think when you throw that in, I also think the Tyler Helinski thing, that suicide, that has to affect a team. Like, that has to really shake a team to its core. And I just think mentally and emotionally, that's a tough thing to just shake off and just get back to working out. And so I think that is a factor. I just think there's a lot of, I mean, again, you talked about Alex Grinch gone. They got Gardner Minshew as their potential starter, who's a grad transfer from East Carolina. There's some good players on this team, but all those offensive linemen gone. If someone's going to have a cycle down year, all the signs point to Washington State. And that's not to say that every time someone plays Washington State, it's not a dangerous game. But I've got them winning at San Jose State at Eastern or against San Jose State against Eastern Washington. I got them beating Oregon State, and then I had them stealing a win somewhere else on the line. So I picked a Cal game at home, but. I think 4-8 is a pretty reasonable expectation to me.
If you don't even look at, I mean, I would never suggest a blind wager, but I kind of feel like on vibes alone, you could be like, Washington State, will they meet expectations? I'm guessing no. Like just based on the mood around the program.
And you don't
right
even have
now.
To look at what the expectation is. Like, don't even tell me what the expectation is. But they're not going to meet it.
They're not
going
to meet it. Yes.
There's just too many things that are too many obstacles here for them to meet expectations. Like, think about it. So 6.5 is the number. If you're trying to get to 7, who are you beating there? Oh, and by the way, I had them losing at Wyoming. In week one,
I was gonna say I know that your boy Bo Baldwin's gone, but isn't Eastern Washington even gonna be a challenge? That's very Washington State to lose your FCS game
for sure. Yeah, I mean they even when they're good, they have trouble with the FCS teams. So I don't know. Like, if finding 7 games on the schedule for a Washington State team is a tough task to me.
Yeah. What's the expectation? Yeah, Washington State. I don't think it. Not feeling it. This was a really interesting number. Cal at 5.5. I think that it's interesting because there was a 3-0 start for Justin Wilcox, a lot of positive momentum. Then the rest of the season set in, and they finished with a 5-7 record. This set at 5.5 to get to a bowl game would feel very, very big. They are in the tougher half of the conference. We said the Pac-12 South is funky. I think the top-heavy nature of the Pac-12 North makes it harder for a team like Cal to be able to break through and make big jumps up. So I ask you, Barton, I agree, regardless of your pick. Well, not agree. I believe that Cal will be a better football team, that they will be better, but I think that 6 wins is going to be tough.
I picked them over. And I've actually got them at 7-5.
Wow.
I mean, first of all,
are you 100% sure that they're going to beat North Carolina week one?
I wouldn't say I'm 100% sure, but I like them to go 3-0 to start the season.
Gotcha.
I mean, look, Ross Bowers, first year starter, he had over 3,000 yards passing, and they returned their leading rusher.
They were not healthy last year. They got crushed by injuries.
And they had some good young players that got experience, particularly on defense as well. I did not think that the Justin Wilcox hire was impressive when it happened. I was not optimistic, but he was like one of the more pleasant surprises out there last year. That team was good. I mean, you think about what happened. You know, they started 3-0 last year, including a couple games no one really expected them to win at North Carolina and against Ole Miss. They hung in there with USC. They were like beating Oregon at halftime, and then Oregon sort of exploded in the second half, if I remember correctly. You know, they laid an egg against Washington, and that's kind of, you know, Colorado took it to them a little bit, but beyond that, like, everything was respectable. And I don't know that anyone really even expected that last year. So I am under the impression that this is a really good staff. I'm under the impression they're going to take a step forward. I like what they've done from an evaluation standpoint. This is a little bit about just belief in the direction of this program, and they have 18 starters returning, 17 now that Demetrius Robertson is transferred out. But 10 offensive starters returning, or 9 offensive starters returning, I guess. I mean, I think those are encouraging numbers. So I've got them beating UCLA. I've got them beating Oregon State. I picked that Washington upset. Obviously, that's a reach. And then I've got them beating Colorado. So, yeah, I guess 7-5, 6-6 range. But basically, what I'm calling is for them to upset somebody and then be a team that's sort of a competent Big 12 or Pac-12 North team here for the latter half of the season.
I believe that with the returning experience, they will be better. But when I was having to do my balance, you know, trying to figure out, you know, make all the math work, I think Cal fell on the short end of this. It feels like a team that I would not be surprised to finish 6-6, but I picked them at 5-7.
Yeah, so they were 5-7 last year, and I think they'll be better. And so that's why I picked the over, but I'm not. Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna stand on the table and I'm not gonna die on the Cal Hill. But I've got some. I'm encouraged by what I've seen out of them.
I think that a 6-win season for UCLA would be a huge achievement for Chip Kelly.
Yeah,
you talked me out of this one. You and I had talked before I wrote this. For CBSSports.com. Didn't you say that there's just
I've got some, like, I'm having a hard time with UCLA. So one of the things that sort of started to shift my opinion a little bit is I don't really love the way they're recruiting, because they're a little bit right now in this 2019 cycle, they're a little bit like, we're going to out evaluate people, we don't have to play the, like, you know, love up these kids. Like, we're not going to recruit like everybody else. We're just going to be sort of take the business approach and take the NFL model and just impress guys with our presentation. And so I don't love what they're doing in terms of who they're attracting, but I heard recently that like one of the top prospects in the country you've got on campus, and all these kids basically care about is how many times you're DMing them and what kind of graphic on Twitter you're sending them and like just sort of this superficial stuff, right? But UCLA is not doing that, and that's why, and you kind of have to play that game. But when they've gotten kids on campus, like they've been apparently incredibly impressive with their plan for development, their plan for diet and sleep, and their plan for what's going to happen on the field, and just this, like, I think Chip Kelly is the real deal as a coach. I think he is good enough to have this team overachieving, even despite all of its flaws. And then when you just look at the roster, like, the receivers are pretty good. I mean, Diamond Lee and Theo Howard and Demetri Felton and guys like that are, I mean, those are athletic guys. Caleb Wilson was hurt half of last year, but when he played, he was as good a tight end as there was in the country. Their offensive line is bad.
Yeah, the trenches are not good.
Yes, but, you know, let's assume that maybe they can piecemeal something together.
Can we?
I don't know. But I'm saying, like, let's assume they can make them not horrible.
Right.
And then when you look at the defense, they still have Darnay Holmes, you know, a Darius Pickett. You know, they got Jalen Phillips. I don't love their defense either, but you just there's all these little, like sort of speckles of these of you know, kind of flashes of gold here as you're looking in on the roster. And so all that to say, I'm not ready to start calling for them to be like a 4-win team or a 3-win team or something. I got them pushing at 5 wins, but I could see them getting to over. I could see them figuring out a way to get to 6-6. And I sort of surprised myself at how dismissive I was of this team earlier. So I don't know. That's not exactly like a full-throated like endorsement of UCLA, but it is like a little bit more optimism than I once had.
Yeah, I don't think that there is a single guaranteed win on the schedule.
The schedule's tough too.
I think every single game for UCLA is going to be a fight. And I do think that, you know, Chip Kelly's a fantastic coach. The guy was 46-7 as a head coach. Like there will be games that are won. There will be players that are developed. There will be moments where with the razor thin margin for error in college football, the difference will be that one sideline has Chip Kelly and the other one doesn't. But I don't think with this roster that there is going to be enough of that. I mean, when the exiting staff and the current staff are both out here like, I don't know, man, it's going to be a while before UCLA is back at it. Like,
you're right.
That kind of consistency and narrative is not something that we see with a lot of coaching changes. And so when a very tough schedule, not liking what I see in the trenches. UCLA came up in on the short end of a lot of my toss-up games when I was going through and trying to divvy out the wins. And so I've got under, and if I felt better, I think I would even only get to push under.
Right. I mean, UCLA, if UCLA goes 5-7, they'll be considered a bad team. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like if you're picking 5 wins for UCLA that suddenly you think like Chip Kelly comes in and is overnight turned things around. Like 5-7 is not a good record at
right.
UCLA. So I still think like you can find 5 wins, or I can find 5 wins and still say, all right, this is not a team that is not there yet, but they've shown flashes and you can sort of pencil a win in because of Chip Kelly. So. That's kind of where I'm at with the push. So if you're taking the over on UCLA, you know, buyer beware.
So this next one, I got to give a shout out to podcast listener and good friend Blaine. He pitched me on this last week, and I told him, I was like, well, we're about to record win total, so I got to give you the credit on this, and I want to ask you the same question. Is Arizona State over the value play of the college football season?
I don't know. This was another one I had a really hard time with. I was sitting there. This was like one of the last ones I picked. So I've been sort of marking all my wins and losses down on these other schedules, and then I get to Arizona State, and they're like, you know, they got all these L's next to their name because that was just a swing game that I sent other ways. But it's a scary way to, it's a scary under to play because this offense is stacked.
So, and this is a team that won six Pac-12 games last year. And they bring back Manny Wilkins. They bring back Neil Harry. To think that there would be a massive drop off right now with a team that returns so much. They won seven games, six of them in conference play. To think that all of a sudden the bottom's just going to fall out, because there is not an overwhelming amount of confidence in Arizona State, in the Herm Edwards experience across the landscape. But I mean, Herm Edwards can talk to this group of veterans like pros, and he doesn't need to sell them like he needs to sell a 17 or 18 year old, because these are going to be Arizona State players that are trying to get to the league. Like, I think that he can connect with this group. And then this was Blaine's other argument. He's like, but then in 2019, that's when you start expecting the bottom to drop out.
Well, all right, but here's the counter argument to being bullish on this. Like, I think this is another one where, all right, if you're picking the over on Arizona State, I'm not ready to call it a value play, because think about who they got on their, like, they got Michigan State out of conference.
Yeah.
They got at San Diego State. They're playing Washington and Stanford from the north. That was my issue with them, is this is such a brutal schedule. And so I think I ended up with them at 5-7, and yet, like, I didn't. I mean, Manny Wilkins is really good, and even if he gets hurt, I think that they think that their quarterbacks behind him are decent. They return all their leading receivers, but they also lost some pretty significant talent on defense, particularly on the defensive line. So it's a tough one to peg, and I don't hate the, you know, the thought process of like, it's just sort of the,
it's a contrarian play.
It's contrarian, but it's also like Arizona State's like is a little bit of a swing team. Like there's a lot of toss up games. I don't see a lot of surefire wins, but I don't see a lot of surefire losses either. So sure, I think it could go either way. And there's this big X factor of Herm Edwards. Like, is this guy real or not?
Right.
And it's like, what is this? Is this a coach or is
Devil's
this,
Digest? Whoa, boy, I don't like them Devils.
Yeah, so like, I don't know. I picked them push to under, but I don't feel this is a stay away team for me.
I think that they can beat Arizona on the road, and I think they beat Colorado. And I think they can beat. Did they catch? They catch Utah, not in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, that's a home Utah game.
Yeah, I don't.
So what do you have them? What was your pick on them?
My initial pick was under. I wanted to at least provide the theory, because I might be on board with it come Locke's podcast time.
Well, and the other thing I like about Arizona, it's like I mentioned, their quarterback and their receivers. I also think they have a good offensive line. I think Cole Cabral is really good. They have Roy Hemsley, who is a transfer from USC, who I think has got a chance to be really good. Casey Tucker, the Stanford grad transfer. Like, there's reason to think offensively they could be really good. But they had to replace their coordinators. You know, Billy Napier's not there.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I mean,
I'm pushed to under.
They won in Salt Lake City last year. So they beat Oregon State.
It happens.
Arizona, sometimes. Colorado, Washington, which we mentioned was a weird game. And they won. They beat Utah and they beat Oregon.
I mean, they lose to Mario Richard and Kalen Ballage.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those guys are a pretty scary 1-2 punch at running back. And they lose. You know, they lose JoJo Wicker and Tashaun Smallwood and DJ Calhoun, and there's some ballers that aren't there anymore on defense.
All right, we're starting to get near the end of the line. It's always tough when you're picking over under for a team that the expectation is set at won't make a bowl game. Colorado's number's at 4.
Colorado was a loss or was a win for a lot of teams as I was going through. And then when I actually started looking at Colorado, I liked them better than I thought I would.
Really? And
so I'm actually at over, like, four is such a an enticing number, and I've got them over four.
I think four is the number.
You think that's what they hit?
Yeah, four? I'm push under.
So I'm over.
Yeah.
Because I think they'll beat Colorado State. They'll beat New Hampshire. And then I think they beat Oregon State. All right. So you're right there. You're at three. And can you find two more games? I think they beat Washington State. I think they're a better team than Washington State this year. And then I've got them, you know, pick your other upset somewhere. But I've actually got them beating Utah at home. But look, they've got – I think Steven Montez is – remember, he was hurt last year some, and he also he played for their departed, I can't remember the guy's name now. I actually liked him a lot.
From the 2016 season, Montez had to come in and play like three or four games during that year.
Flashed and was good last year when he played. And so I think Steven Montez has a chance to be really good this year. They've got a bunch of these sort of athletic. I mean, they've sort of turned. They're more of a spread offense now, and they've got a lot of athletes at receiver. I think they've recruited at a decent level there. And then across the board at on defense, I think they're bubbling up some good players. Davion Taylor is a JUCO kid that's one of the freakiest athletes in the country. As I started looking at this team, I liked them more, and I think that they're too good to only win four games.
I don't think Colorado State's a win. I don't think Nebraska's a win. UCLA and Arizona State get really interesting, but I mean, this could be a team that's 1-5 heading into the back half of the schedule.
I don't think they will be, though. UCLA, Arizona State, Oregon State, Arizona, Cal.
So, like, do you think Colorado and Arizona are in the same bucket? Because I have got Arizona definitively a step above Colorado, and that game's in Tucson. But if on a neutral field, I think I favor Arizona by 7.5.
I think they're. I think that they are on a neutral field. I think they're. It's more of a 2.5-3 point difference.
Wow.
On the spread.
You
to
really
me.
So to in me. My opinion, then that sounds like you like Colorado a lot more than I do then.
I do. I think that yes, I do.
Just enough
Remember, this
just,
is a team,
just
like,
enough information to be dangerous.
If yeah, I know. if we think Mike McIntyre's a good coach, you know, that's the same guy that turned San Jose State from 0-10-2 or whatever he did at San Jose State. And then he got this program rolling with the help of Jim Leavitt and 2 years ago, they were 10-4. Step back after they lost all those guys. Well, this year, again, their quarterback situation is good. Not just solid, but I think good. And then if we just think that they are developing guys appropriately, I just think they're too good to not – I think there's better than four wins here.
It is not totally fair for news reports and scandal to always impact the way that I view the on-field product, but my opinion of Mike McIntyre quickly changed. He was named the coach of the year by most organizations, and then in like the next 6 months, we found out about a staff member abuse allegations and some big-time questions about whether or not Mike McIntyre and that Colorado staff handled them properly. I don't make those a direct factor, but it does make me. It does change. It changes the way that I view. Oh well, Mike McIntyre will figure it out. He's a coach of the year.
Right. Right.
So
yeah, and his persona is a little bristly and like not that likable, also. And so that's like, yeah, I'm not like a pro hire Mike McIntyre guy, but I'm also a. I respect what he's done.
What he's done,
what
yeah.
His body of work is.
Agree. All right, let's Jonathan Smith. Woo, buddy. It's a tough start for Jonathan Smith at Oregon State having to open the year in Columbus against Ohio State.
Yeah. I mean, I got two wins on the schedule. I got Southern Utah and at Nevada, and at Nevada is going to be probably a tricky game. I mean, I just think this is the Pac-12 is a conference with a lot of parity, and a lot of teams can beat a lot of other teams. And then there's Oregon State, who I think is a step below. I mean, they return 8 starters on defense, and I think some of those guys are pretty good players. But I just, to me, like, it feels like Jonathan Smith is taking over a reconstruction project, and this is going to be year one, and it's going to be about close losses and improvement and taking strides, and then we'll see what happens year two.
Mm. I've got him over here. I think.
Really? So who do you have on beating?
I said I've got the two or one of the two. No, two non-con wins. What'd you say? Southern Utah and Nevada.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I think they get one of either Cal at home or Colorado on the road, and that again goes back to me just. You know, maybe I am not. I haven't gotten the opportunity, or at least didn't have the prior knowledge to look at Colorado's roster and dig into it and start to feel better than I did based on my initial assumption on where that program is right now. But yeah, I think that getting Cal at home and Colorado on the road, they win two non-con games and one of those two, then I think they can get it. I mean, they showed, was it the Washington game where they showed a lot of fight? And they had that game low scoring early.
Yeah, I mean when they made the coaching change last year, they had some really strong performances. Like, I mean, they played Stanford really close. You know, they had a close loss to Cal. Was it Washington? They got blown out last year, but there were some positive moments last year. But I don't know. I just don't know if they're ready yet to take the to take the monumental step to 3 wins. To go from 1 all the way to 3.
All right. So Chip's on the over, Barton's on the under for the Beavs. And that's a Pac-12. You wanna, let's see. So to review, Arizona State under. And then a push under or a push over. I'm waffling all over the place. Cal, yeah. We got a Barton over, a Chip under. Colorado, Barton over, Chip under. Oregon, both of us on the over. Oregon State, Chip over, Barton under. Stanford, both of us on the over. UCLA, we're both on the under, right? Or you push?
I was actually pushed to over.
Pushed to over. I've got the under. I think that's about a 4-8. USC, I'm on the under, you're on the over, right?
Yes.
Utah, are we both on the over?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Washington, I'm on the over. I think that's 11-1. Barton,
I was under.
Jumping off the bandwagon that he laid down the track. He set up the signs, he drew the maps, showed the bandwagon how to get to the promised lands, and now he's jumping off. He's going under, thinks Washington goes 10-5. And then Washington State on vibes alone, just nah, not going to meet expectations. Both of us on the under.
Hard under there. That might be my favorite one of the conference, is under Washington State 6.5.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just you don't just get back off that plane from Knoxville and everything's hunky dory.
Right. Come on back, coach. Yeah, let's go win some games. Nah.
He is Barton Simmons. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Please subscribe to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. We appreciate all of your comments, all of your reviews, all of your ratings. 5 stars, because we give you that top quality 5-star content. We're going to keep it going. More win totals coming soon. Barton, thank you very much.
Deserve.